Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Maybe you've seen that guy who sat all those years on the baseline alongside his former college roommate, Paul Allen. You know who I'm talking about. Paul Allen's right-hand man, Bert Cold. See, Bert Cold found his way into the Trailblazers world not because he bought the Blazers, not because he was a general manager, a team president, or a scout even. Bert Cold is not an NBA player. He had no NBA background. The reason why Bert Cold is being talked about on today's show, in fact, the sole reason, is that once upon a time in college, when Paul Allen was assigned a dorm roommate, they assigned that roommate as Bert Cold. Paul Allen and Bert Cold met in college. They developed a friendship. And all these years later, even after the death of Paul Allen, Bert Cold still around, and his fingerprints all over the Trailblazers organization. A lot of people in the last 24 hours celebrating the promotion of Joe Cronin. I'm not sure what to make of it. I did not like Cronin's moves around the NBA trade deadline in February. He traded starters for role players. Blazers not better off from the deals that Joe Cronin made. And I know, you're going to message me, you're going to at me on Twitter, you're going to tell me that, hey, I don't understand. There was cap room created. There were exceptions created. Yes, the Blazers, in an ideal world, if they were a destination franchise in a major market, might be able to sell that to you, but they're not. They're not in an ideal world. They're in the NBA, and the Trailblazers now are sitting in a position with Joe Cronin as the permanent general manager, where they have to rely upon the luck of the draw next week in the NBA draft lottery in order to make sense of their offseason. The Blazers with the sixth worst record in the NBA a year ago. Joe Cronin seemingly in charge of the basketball side of the operation. But I'm here to tell you that it's time to pump the brakes a little bit on the enthusiasm around the Blazers. And I say that because I want to see that this organization is going to end up in good hands. There are three things that I believe have to happen to the Trailblazers in order for this franchise really to get some lift in the next 36 months. Now, most everyone believes that the Blazers are being positioned for a sale in the next 6 to 18 months. The Blazers themselves have not said that, but insiders at Vulcan, the parent company, the mothership, so to speak, of the Trailblazers, tell me that Bert Cold, that former college roommate of Paul Allen, has assumed the lead role on the sale of the Trailblazers, and that he's carefully studying the ongoing auction of the Denver Broncos in the NFL to get ideas or to gain insight into how he might best monetize the sale of the Blazers. Now, I had a source at Vulcan Inc. tell me that the sale of this franchise is going to be a significant pivot point for the Blazers, and it probably will become an interesting point of view from the Seahawks organization, as they are owned by the same Paul G. Allen Trust. Now, the prevailing hope around the NBA, not just in Portland, is that Cold and Jody Allen, who is the trustee of her brother's estate, will not just sell the team to the highest bidder, but that they would select an owner or a group that maybe has a local connection to the Pacific Northwest. I've talked about this all the time on the show, and maybe that their aim would be not so much The bottom line, get every penny that you can get for this franchise, but a very a holistic approach, so to speak. Looking for an owner who would do the best thing for the franchise and continue Paul Allen's legacy. Now, Paul Allen, I knocked a lot of Paul Allen's decisions, but one thing that I could never criticize was his passion for the team, his passion for the NBA, his passion for the Blazers. It was his pet project, and I know that these sports franchises have now grown in valuation to $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, in the case of the Denver Broncos, maybe a $5 billion enterprise. Like, they've gone from being hobbies and tax write-offs to extremely lucrative businesses. Gambling, funneling money in, the television deals in the respective leagues, funneling money in, the price of admission, funneling money in. The revenue streams have just grown larger, fatter, more lucrative, and now we suddenly have these billionaire pet projects that once upon a time it used to be a vanity purchase by these billionaires, are now being gobbled up by collectives and groups of investors who are all putting money together. And in some cases, this is good, and in some cases it's bad. But in the case of the Blazers, I think the Blazers being in the hands of a new owner is the most important thing in the next 6 to 18 months. Like, you've got to get this organization out from under the grip of Jody Allen, the trustee of her brother's estate, and Burt Cold, who has no business running an NBA organization. Now, source at Vulcan told me that Burt does not think holistically, that he will, quote, he will do whatever he can to get the most money to impress Jody. He's a major wannabe. Both leagues, the NBA and NFL, view Burt Cold as a problem, end quote. Wannabe. Like, think about that in context for the Blazers organization. I'm going to say something here that may sound harsh to you, but I think it's accurate. You've got a wannabe in Burt Cold who is running the organization. His fingerprints are all over it. All these horrible decisions that you have seen this franchise make in the last 12 to 18 months, really since the death of Paul Allen, Burt Cold is running the operation. Second thing you have is you have a wannabe owner in Jody Allen. She's not a real owner. She never bought the team. She never intended to run the team. Her brother did not intend for her to run the team. The team is in his estate. You have a wannabe in Burt Cold. You have a wannabe in Jody Allen. I got to be honest. I think you got a wannabe coach in Chauncey Billups, and I think you got a wannabe general manager in Joe Cronin. It is a wannabe franchise right now, this Blazers organization. The Blazers did not conduct an official search for the general manager. I'd feel better about it, and a lot of other people would feel better about it if the Blazers had gone out and interviewed some other people and said, no, we have the best guy in Joe Cronin right here. But they didn't do that. And he did essentially the same thing they did when they went in search of a head coach to replace Terry Stotts. They got a coach who was not qualified to be a coach in Chauncey Billups, not a head coach anyway, a guy who had only coached 1 year as an assistant coach in the NBA. I watched last year, and yeah, his roster was hamstrung, and yeah, he had some injury issues, and yeah, some players checked out on him. But man, I was not impressed with Chauncey Billups. I don't think the Blazers upgraded from Terry Stotts to Chauncey Billups. I just don't think so. I'm not a fan of Neil Olshey as a general manager, but I would feel better about Joe Cronin if the Blazers had gone out, as Jason Quick of The Athletic wrote today, if the Blazers had gone out and interviewed 4, 5, 6, 7 other people, I would feel great about it, And I think, I'm not alone in that, obviously. But now you have news out of Vulcan Inc. that the organization is being run by Burt Cold. And I wrote about it today. You can read it at johnconzano.com. I wrote a lengthy column about the problems in this and the potential sale and the lease negotiations. I got a look at the 132-page Blazers lease, the operating agreement between the city of Portland and Trailblazers Inc. It's really interesting to me. The Trailblazers are paying $1 a year to rent the land beneath Moda Center. It's a pretty favorable lease agreement for the Blazers. In exchange, they are running and operating and overseeing Memorial Coliseum on behalf of the city. And, there are a lot of questions mixed up in this. But what needs to happen, if I could just throw out a little vision today, and I don't think Burt Cold's the guy to do this, but what needs to happen is somebody needs to buy the Blazers who really loves the Blazers, right? Like, you look around sports, professional sports, and I don't care if it's the Kentucky Derby, or I don't care if it's the Major League Baseball or the NHL, even college sports, you have stakeholders who are passionate, who are invested. And in the case of colleges, you've got stakeholders who either went to college at those universities or have for a long time rooted for those universities. It has a real hometown, anchored, tethered, use whatever metaphor you want, feel to it. That's really missing from the Blazers right now. Even when Paul Allen was alive and running the team from Seattle, I still felt like there was some oversight, like Paul cared. He deeply cared. He was invested. Right now, they're on autopilot. So what needs to happen is somebody who gives a rip about the Blazers needs to come in and buy this team. And further, what needs to happen with this lease and operating agreement, it's not all that complex. I look at it, it seems like it's a no-brainer that city officials would want to get a deal done. It's a no-brainer that the Blazers would want to get a deal done. It makes no sense for this lease to expire and to end up at an impasse. I mean, it's just a favorable win-win scenario. But what needs to happen is somebody needs to come in and say to the city, look, yeah, we would like to re-up this lease, but we'd like to develop the area around Moda Center, develop it into an entertainment district, restaurants. Is Memorial Coliseum part of that? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Maybe you tear it down and you create a veterans memorial tribute to veterans there that stands that people can come visit and people can actually walk by and honor veterans instead of having it be hidden away down off to the side of Memorial Coliseum where nobody sees it unless there's a Wiggles concert or a Winterhawks game. It's just not right, and it shows no vision, it shows no planning, and there's no emotional or passionate investment in it. So a potential owner who would buy the team, care about the team, get out of the way of the basketball operations side of the team, allow Joe Cronin and the basketball people, his scouts and others, to do their job without whispering into their ears. I suspect Bert Colt has been in Joe Cronin's ear. I suspect he was in his ear around the trade deadline. I half wonder if those were Cronin's moves or Bert Colt's moves at the trade deadline, and I'm told that he is way, 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 way out of bounds in stepping all over this organization since the death of his best friend, Paul Allen. And if I'm Paul Allen up in heaven somewhere or wherever Paul Allen is, I got to be rolling over right now and wondering what has happened to this franchise that he invested so much money and passion and love in, because right now the Blazers are sitting here hoping and praying on a draft lottery outcome that is going to defy statistics and help them rebuild. But the truth is, real organizations, winning organizations, they don't do it with hope and wishes and luck. They do it by making shrewd, smart, deliberate moves that make sense. And I don't see that right now from the Trailblazers. And you're not going to see it as long as Bert Colt is in charge. He's running the ship, folks, from behind the scenes up in Seattle. And you can make Joe Cronin your general manager. But in the end, if you've got the puppet master, Bert Colt off to the side pulling the strings, I think you've got an unhealthy outlook if you're a Blazers fan. We got a great show for you today. Punchin' Audio's coming up. We're going to talk some baseball in the Pac-12 conference. We will also get a visit from a couple of comedians. The Sklar brothers are coming to Portland. They're going to join us on the program today. And we got a group with Milwaukee Lumber who's doing something great for the community. And they're going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour to tell us about what they're doing and how you can get involved. Great show today. Still ahead, Punchin' Audio. Leave it right here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Lake Mead is the reservoir that was formed by Hoover Dam on the Colorado River, about 25 miles east of Las Vegas. Largest reservoir in the United States in terms of water capacity. I've been reading stories in the last 24 hours about Lake Mead, creepy stories. The lake, because of a lack of water and a drought, the water level is receding, and they found human remains in a barrel. Then they found more human remains. I guess bodies continuing to surface in Lake Mead. It's not funny, but I'm just shaking my head at it. And All the talk is about Vegas and the lore of organized crime, and so they've had two sets of human remains emerge within a week from the depths of the drought-stricken reservoir. So the investigators and others are saying there's no telling what you'll find. Former Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman said, quote, "It's not a bad place to dump a body," end quote. That would concern me. Like, you know, if I'm a friend of Oscar Goodman, I would be like, hey, might not be the best thing to say as the former mayor of Las Vegas. Goodman, as a lawyer, represented mob figures, including Anthony Tony the Ant Spoletro, who served three terms three sentences in prison. So there you have it. Adam, what do you make of that? The mayor saying it's not a bad place to dump a body.
You know, maybe some reverse psychology where he's going to put double the cops at that river now. Be like, oh, all the low-level criminals that are like, oh, where am I going to dump this body? Let me take the mayor's advice and boom, 40 cops are there to arrest you.
Somebody asked the mayor, you know, name some names. Who might turn up in this reservoir? And he said he was relatively sure it would not be Jimmy Hoffa. But he seemed that this was a place, apparently, where the mob used to dump people. So keep an eye on Lake Mead. Not a good place to go swimming. Let's play some Punch It audio. We got the best sound from all around. Let's lighten it up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio, presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, Tampa Bay Rays outfielder Brett Phillips entered a blowout game as a pitcher. He's done that a couple of times. And throws about 55 miles an hour. But he served one up to Mike Trout. Here's how it sounded. Punch it.
This is an interesting matchup. Brett Phillips versus the three-time MVP Mike Trout. Trout, first pitch. Drives it to the rock pile. Take that! His second homer of the game, a two-run shot. It's 10-0.
10-0 there. He took a 54-mile-an-hour meatball to the weird rock pile beyond center field. What is that rock pile anyway? Phillips on the field, his reaction was like, he was like a pitch, like a Cy Young Award winner who'd made a bad pitch. He was so disappointed, demoralized. But he took to Twitter after the game, and he fired off a hilarious tweet. It said this: "You got lucky, Mike Trout." Fans loved it. Mike Trout loved it. Kind of a fun moment. Shaq talking about the Suns and the Mavericks, Game 6. Here's Shaq on Game 6. Punch it.
Luka probably need to get his guys more involved. When they are more involved, we've seen it. They're, you know, are the better team. And I think at home, guys are going to be more aggressive. They're going to play better. But if Phoenix wants to advance, they got to play like they play like this. Chuck was right. Devin, you're the youngest. You're the greatest player on that team. You got to take over. The Bahamian Beast has to dominate, and all the others have to follow. But I expect Dallas to come out after this 30-point blowout, be more aggressive. Reggie said it. They're not going to go 8 for 32 from the three. They're definitely going to shoot the ball well. So I think it's going 7. I hope it's going 7.
The Phoenix Suns blasted the Mavericks in the second half of Game 5. 110-80 is your final. Phoenix leads the best-of-seven series 3-2. Mavericks facing elimination in Game 6 tomorrow at home. Keep an eye on it. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid not the MVP. It goes to Nikola Jokic. Here's Embiid talking about it. Is he disappointed? Is he upset? Is he pointing a finger? Here's Embiid. Punch it.
This is something that I knew, you know, weeks ago, you know, even probably 2 weeks before the season ended, I just knew it wasn't going to happen. And congrats to Nikola. You know, he deserved it. He had an amazing season. You know, there's no right or wrong. You know, there was a lot of candidates. It could have gone either way. I'm not mad. No, that's 2 years in a row. You know, I put myself in that position. It didn't happen. I don't know what else I had to do to win it. And to me, it's like, at this point, it's like, it's whatever. You know, it's really time to, like, really put, you know, all my energy into the bigger picture, which is to win the whole thing.
Well, his hopes of winning a championship this season hit a hurdle on Tuesday night. Sixers got blasted by the Miami Heat, 110-85 in Game 5. They're in a 3-2 series hold. Richard Jefferson talking about why it's been so ugly for the Sixers. Punch it.
Well, that's the conversation we've been having about James Harden so much. But just when you look at the stats, 36% from the field, 28% from three. They had 15 free throws and 15 turnovers. Now, just think about that. Joel Embiid averages 10 on the season. James Harden is one of the most historic free throw shooters that we've seen in his ability to create contact. None of that was going on.
Doc Rivers also talked about what went wrong. They lost by 35. Punching.
They were just more physical. We didn't run anything. We didn't run our stuff very well. We played at a snail's pace. I think, what did we have, 85 shots. Turned the ball over. They gave up. I mean, everything they did tonight was harder and better. Their stuff was better than what we ran. Their energy was better. Their toughness was better. I haven't said that very often about us, and that's on all of us.
Look, they lacked consistency. They got off. They were wobbling early in this game. The Heat had a whole bunch of momentum from the start. But I was concerned with Embiid's comments after the game. He said, we weren't focused enough. We didn't play hard. We didn't follow the game plan. At this point, you know, they were down by 12 at half. They still had a comeback out there. It was possible. But they came back in the second half, and they weren't any better. They made it very easy for Miami on the offensive end of the floor. Sixers lose this one 120-85. They now face elimination. Game 6 Thursday at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. A win for Philly would force a Game 7. A loss obviously removes them from the picture. Bill Simmons talking about Tom Brady's broadcasting deal. Tom Brady looking at $300 million-plus from Fox when he retires. Here's Bill Simmons. Punch it.
I think it's one of the most confusing media moments in recent sports media history. I don't understand any piece of it, including the part that he might play two more years. What if Olsen and Burkhardt are really good together? And Tom Brady's just going to come in as the home wrecker? Also, like, you know, as somebody who really appreciates all the great stuff Brady did for my life over the years, when I saw these Super Bowls, so many fun moments, like, this seems to be a guy that's just grasping at the next step. Really since that last playoff game.
Bill Simmons talking Tom Brady. Look, I disagree with Simmons, because what is Tom Brady supposed to do when Fox comes at him with $347 million and says, hey, when you're ready, the money's here? He'd be out of his mind to turn that down. The bigger thing, the bigger question I have is, I have reasonable doubt that Tom Brady's going to be any good at this. That I have reasonable doubt that he's not going to be bored sitting in the broadcast booth watching a bunch of people bumble around out there and try to play quarterback. I think there's a real risk that Brady takes this job and finds out that Fox just wanted him for the publicity, the buzz that they're getting right now. And in the fine print of the deal yesterday, as it was announced, was a line about how he will be an ambassador for Fox. Are they going to trot him out at corporate events? Are they going to use Tom Brady to secure advertising? Of course they are. At $347 million, I think that's a reasonable ask. Josh Pate talking about why USC needs Oregon and Utah to be successful. Punch it.
People are saying, oh, it's a matter of time with USC. Well, even if it is, and even if Lincoln Riley does have them at a top five level every year, you need Utah. You need Oregon. It would be nice if Washington would come to the party. It'd be really nice if one of these Arizona schools would get their act together. I don't have my breath held on that. UCLA, Stanford, you know, it would be nice. Point is, we need them. You need them. As a Pac-12 conference overall, you need them. So if we were to have this happen, I don't know how much it would mean for the rest of the year, but I do know if Oregon tops Georgia and Utah tops Florida in week one, yeah, I mean, what bigger story do you have in week one?
Look, I think you're wishing and dreaming to say Oregon's going to beat Georgia in Atlanta and Utah's going to beat Florida. I could see one of those things happening, more likely Utah over Florida. But the truth is, yeah, of course. Like, you need USC to be good if you're the Pac-12 Conference, and you need Oregon to be good, and you need Utah to be good. And, yeah, it would be great if one of the Arizona schools got their act together or if David Shaw and Stanford could have a resurgence. But let's be real. Like, I get why everybody says it's important for USC to matter, but I don't think it's USC or bust. Like, as we go back in time and we look at Reggie Bush, Pete Carroll, Matt Leinart, those USC teams, sure, it was great for the conference to see them playing, you know, in a national title game against Vince Young in Texas. But the truth is, what the Pac-12 needs more than anything is someone, anyone, to be a playoff contender next season. And it's probably Utah. It's not going to be Lincoln Riley's time, not yet. And I don't think Oregon is quite going to be there under Dan Lanning in year one unless something just falls into place that we don't expect. Maybe Bo Nix plays lights out. So I kind of think, like everybody talking about, of course you want depth in your conference. I think it's almost idiotic to say, you know, USC or bust. You want depth. You want validation from other teams. But it could be Utah making a playoff run this next season or Oregon. It could be 2 years from now, USC, or 3 years from now, USC. And of course, yeah, if you could have depth in this conference, it would be great. But to me, that felt like a guy just spending the offseason talking just for the sake of talking. Yeah, USC needs Oregon and Utah to be successful. How about this? How about Oregon and Utah need USC to be successful? How about that, Trojan Nation? Nick Daschle of the Oregonian coming up. We're going to talk about this Pac-12 baseball postseason tournament. The Beavers are on fire on the baseball diamond. That and more still ahead.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
One of my favorite arcade video games was NBA Jams. Love that game. And you know, I love, like, I was driving maybe 2-3 years ago, and I was leaving downtown Portland, and I saw a pickup truck, and a guy had the arcade version of NBA Jam in the back of his pickup truck. And, man, I took a picture of her. I tweeted it out. I was like, damn. But, you know, I love, like, some of the little nuances of the game, like when a player, like, he's on fire, and all of a sudden the player is can't miss. The Oregon State baseball team is on fire. I thought about them, and I thought, man, if NBA Jams had a baseball game, it would be the Beavers are on fire. They have won 7 straight. They beat University of Portland 4-0 yesterday in Corvallis. 7 straight wins for the Beavers, 12 out of their last 13. This season, they've lost only one series during the season. They lost a 3-game series to Stanford in April. They have not lost back-to-back games all year long. They have to be the favorite entering the Pac-12 baseball tournament that is happening here after a couple of more series. They got a couple more series before the end of the season, but one more home series. And they've got to be a favorite in that all-new Pac-12 baseball tournament going on in Arizona. Here to talk about it, the great Nick Daschle, who writes for the Oregonian. He joins us now. That team is on fire, man. What's it like to be in the stadium and watch that team play?
Oh, man, it's electric. I mean, you mentioned the 7-game winning streak. That's just the start of it. I mean, when they lost that series to Stanford, and I think there was a lot of people that are a little concerned about, you know, well, maybe they start out hot and they, you know, kind of everybody's catching up to them. You know, they were 20-7 at that point, and they wondered, you know, where's this team going? Well, since then they've been 19-2, they've won every series. They, you know, not only is a 7-game winning streak, they lost 11 games. They've given up 2 runs or less in 10 of them. Wow. 4 shutouts. I mean, it's just incredible the stuff they're doing right now.
How balanced do they look to you? Because, you know, I want to say that, gosh, they're pitching really well. But then I look at some of the hitters on this team, you know, and I see what they're doing. And I go, this is a team that's got some offense. It's got some pop. And They pitch it too.
Yeah, I mean they seem to have a good mix of singles and doubles hitters and then some home run power throughout the lineup. Even their 8 and 9 guys seem that there's no real weak outs in the lineup. So yeah, it's a good solid lineup, and they've got some speed at the top of it, and obviously Jacob Melton is just hitting the crap out of it. And then you go to the pitching staff, and I mean, it's the only hole in this team, and I'm not saying it's ever going to come back to bite them, is the lack of left-handed relieving. They literally have one left-handed arm really that they would ever go to, and he's only pitched maybe once in the last 4 weeks. So I mean, if you ever get to a situational deal, maybe that's the one hole on this team, but that's such a minor thing that's pretty easy to overlook that.
I mentioned the Pac-12 postseason baseball tournament, and I kind of want to get your read on what's the scuttlebutt right now about this tournament, because I think when it came out, we all kind of celebrated it as a chance for the Pac-12 to showcase some teams, and maybe some bubble teams in years past that didn't get into the NCAA tournament can play their way in. But is there any downside to this? Is there a danger that Oregon State gets down to Arizona and just doesn't play well and it hurts them, or have they done enough?
You know, for Oregon State, I don't think it's going to hurt them unless they just go, on a big slide here these next 2 weeks and lose, 5 out of 6 to Arizona and UCLA. Then maybe they, but I don't see that coming, especially with Cooper Jerpy and some of these other guys that are starting right now on the mound. Even if they went down there and lost two in a row, I don't see them falling out of a top 8 seed. Like I said, unless it's preceded by losing 5 out of these last 6 or something like that. So no, I see no downside for Oregon State. There's not a ton of upside at this point either, though, because at this point, they're either the 1 or 2 national seed. A third at worst. So really, all they can do from here is fall. So, but I think if they take care of business here these next 2 weeks, the Pac-12 tournament is just a chance to be sharp going into the postseason.
Oregon State will play a series with Arizona coming up. Then I believe they have UCLA to finish the season. Then it's on to that 8-team Pac-12 tournament. Back to the tournament just for a second. It's going to be held at Scottsdale Stadium. That's where the Giants' spring training home is. The top 8 teams will be there. I think it's a good idea because it gives, like I mentioned before, a chance for a bubble team maybe to play its way into the NCAA field. I also think it's an asset that George Kliavkov and his sales staff can go out and sell to television and sell to sponsors. Am I missing anything else?
No, that's pretty much what a lot of conferences have gone to. I mean, baseball is one of those sports that if you get, if your pitching staff gets caught at the right time, you can run through a tournament, and especially the 8-team tournament. I mean, you win your first 2 games, I'm trying to remember, I think you might be in the championship game if you win your first 2. It's 4-2, yeah. So you always have to win, I think you have to win 3 games, no, 4 games you have to win the 8-team tournament. So, it's a chance for a team in 5th or 6th, even 7th. I mean, these teams have proven they can win series all throughout the year. Once you get past Oregon State, I mean, everybody's been beating each other up. So, somebody, gets hot and gets past Oregon State and they're not in the NCAA tournament, shoot, they could work their way in that way. So I don't see any, I think it's a great idea. I mean, it's going to sell tickets. There'll be a lot of Oregon State people down there for sure. I mean, they travel with this team. And it's a good idea.
The University of Oregon baseball team came into the series against Oregon State and, just has not played well in the last few weeks. What do you think's happening with Oregon right now, and how close is Oregon? I guess they're currently sitting in 5th place in the Pac-12. They're still in the top 8, but they're only 2 games away from being out of that postseason tournament. They've got to play well to finish.
Well, that's a team that's been probably a little bit of fool's gold. In that, you know, their hitting is really pretty good, and it's kind of carried them. Their pitching staff is in shambles. I mean, they pitch so many guys. They really don't have – they have maybe one quality starter. They'll pitch six, seven guys in a game at times just because they don't have a bunch of guys that can go out there and throw five, six innings. So they've really been patching it together with their pitching staff. And the hitting has kept them afloat. And they ran into the stretch here where the Oregon State shut them out twice and UC San Diego just shut them out. And they haven't been shut out in 4 years until Oregon State shut them out a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, it's they're on the bubble for sure. That's a team that's got to get going again, and they got to get their bats going, or they're in some trouble.
In the big picture at Oregon State, Nick, where does baseball fall? How important is it? You know, I know it's a matter of pride for the fans and the students who go there, but, you know, where is baseball rank when you talk about men's and women's basketball and football right now on campus?
Well, I mean, you know, money-wise, obviously, it's a distant third to football and basketball, but I think from a fan standpoint, it's probably number two to football, yeah, because you can't really count on the basketball program to be successful year in and year out. You catch a year like last year every once in a while, but baseball generally shows up every season. You can count on being pretty good. Occasionally, they'll have that great team, and I think baseball is right. I'm always curious, you know, if they had an unlimited number of seats, how many could they really sell to that place in a big series? You know, if they had a 10,000 seat stadium, could they sell it out, say, for the regional or something like that? You know, they're putting in some temporaries for UCLA, but that only gets them up, you know, in the close to the mid 4,000s. You know, you kind of wonder, you know, if they did have access to as many seats as they could get their hands on, how many would they actually sell? Because I think if they had a stadium that they could really sell tickets, that might end up being a revenue sport, because you know, the ticket sales would be tremendous.
At what point do you think the athletic department would look into that, or do you think they already are kind of dabbling with the idea of how to monetize the success?
You know, they're always making changes to that place, but to increase the seating capacity on that place to you know, something substantial. Plus, you'd have to really be confident that not only this team is going to be good year in and year out. I don't know if that's so much the deal, but the weather, you know, is the weather like last weekend? The games were all sold out, but the stands weren't anywhere near full because the weather was terrible. So, you know, you got to battle with that. So, I think they'll stick. You know, there may be a day when they can get it up to maybe 5,000. And they'll just go with the, you know, this will just have to be a tough ticket to get and stick with that, because I don't know that you want to spend, there's so many other needs in Oregon State athletics that I don't know that, I mean, Gil Coliseum that's going to be a project down the road that they're going to have to address at some point. And that's going to cost a lot of money to do what you need to do to that place.
Nick Daschle covers Oregon State like no one else does. Let me ask you, you had a piece recently about football ticket sales and the deals that the Beavers made. You pointed out that they've got an unusual deal with Boise State, and now they have a problem with only 26,407 seats with the West Side being renovated. How tight is Reser Stadium going to be for some of these games next season?
You know, if Boise State was a game, say fourth or fifth week of the season, that would be a problem, I think. But given that they have 6,000 student tickets, and the odds are that the students they're not on campus at that point of the year, and so they're not going to show up like they would when they're on campus. So that there should be enough extra tickets to make that go. I mean, I think this year you got 27,000 seats. Fill them, you know, fill those seats. Don't bemoan the fact that you have fewer seats. Go out and sell them all and make the place, you know, as loud as you can make it. Because, I mean, that's the best you can make of it this year. And I mean, they haven't really sold, really, that place is, not had even 27,000 real bodies in it in a couple of years, outside of maybe a game or two, maybe Oregon. They post a number, but it's usually not anywhere close to what the actual number is. So you'd like to get to a couple games there this year where the place is entirely full and see how loud you can make it.
Yeah, I also think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I have a couple of season tickets, and I asked the rep that was saying, hey, do you want to renew them? I said, yeah, you know, in fact, we want two more. We'd love to get four seats. And they said, we got to get back to you. And that made sense to me when I read your piece, because they may not have some extra tickets for all the games. They probably have them for the majority of the games, but not for all of them. And I think it's going to be tricky for some of those games next season once students are back, as you point out. I think, you know, if Oregon State's decent, it could be a hot ticket. Daschle, I appreciate you, man. Keep up the fight. Keep up the good work, and thank you for joining us.
All right, we'll see you, John.
There's Nick Daschle, does a fantastic job covering Oregon State. I want you to leave it here. We got the big splash coming up, and I got a good one.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Every day on the program, we do our big splash. Today is no different.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there.
The big splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Well, every day on the show, we give you our big splash. Today is no different. Tonight, we've got some playoff games in the NBA. Is this newsy enough for you? Milwaukee against Boston coming up tonight. Underway in about 5 minutes, really. And then after that, the Warriors against Memphis trying to move on to the next round. A pair of game fives tonight, both on TNT. Bucks-Celtics knotted at 2-2 after Boston's comeback. Led by Al Horford. And then it's Steph Curry and the Warriors up 3-1, looking to close out the gritty Grizzlies, who need another big performance from Jaren Jackson Jr. and a team effort to extend the series. I think Boston tonight, and I think the Warriors close out Memphis. What do you see, Adam?
Yeah, I think the Warriors close out Memphis, unfortunately. It's a plucky team. They made me $10 by covering the 9.5 last game, but look, the Warriors played probably their worst game in the postseason and still won. I don't see them playing that poor again. Elsewhere, I think we're going to finally get that Giannis game that he just wins himself in Game 5 tonight. Teams that win Game 5 win the series 82% of the time when it's tied 2-2. I think the Bucks take this one.
Yeah, I keep an eye on it. Big game for Boston tonight, and I like the Warriors as well. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we've got a couple things in the 4 o'clock hour that I want to do. Bill Monroe, longtime outdoors writer, is going to be joining us in the 4 o'clock hour. Also, the Sklar brothers, comedians, will be joining us as well. So, our producers are ironing out that right now. Bill Monroe, longtime outdoors writer, and also the Sklar brothers. Looks like Monroe at 4:30. He'll be talking about the Chinook Salmon Run. Monroe's the best when you talk about outdoor writers. And then the Sklar brothers are just funny. They're coming to Portland, and unfortunately, what happened is I double-booked them for 4 o'clock, and I got Monroe at 4 o'clock. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do the Sklar brothers here at 4 o'clock. Is that right, Adam? And then Bill Monroe at 4:30.
Yep, let's do it. Great guess.
All right, here we go. We got that still ahead. But, you know, I think I kind of feel like, tell me if I'm crazy here. Like, if you're in Memphis, you looked at this series with the Warriors. Did it feel a little bit like they're waving the white flag with shutting Ja Morant down? They're being cautious. Like, if they had a chance to win the series, maybe they would approach it differently. Am I reading this wrong? Am I being too hard on the Memphis Grizzlies? I feel like they kind of rolled over here.
I don't think you're being too hard, because I think even in Memphis, if you put some truth serum in them, you say, this is a successful season. We finished as the 2 seed in the Western Conference, which no one thought we could. We had Ja Morant when most improved. We had young guys like Desmond Bane, Dillon Brooks, et cetera, show that they are near all-star level. And you made it to the second round of the playoffs. For a young team, winning that first playoff series in a plucky way against the Minnesota Timberwolves is a big deal. And now next year, they can kind of have those expectations under them to make the NBA Finals. I think they may do something where, look, they have such incredible depth. They may package their fifth, sixth, and seventh best players for a true number two or a true number three on the roster and do a little shake-up there. Overall, a successful season, but it's seemingly over tonight.
Yeah, and I think the Warriors walk into the next round against Phoenix. I've been talking to a lot of people who cover the NBA, Adam, and they're looking at Phoenix, and I keep asking them, Phoenix or the Warriors? Phoenix or the Warriors? And there's some concern about, you know, relying on two scorers if you're the Sun. But I'm looking at the Warriors. I don't love their defensive game right now. A lot of their offense is predicated on playing defense, and they're just not consistently getting the stops that they got when they were playing their best.
Yeah, and when you lose Gary Payton and it's the biggest deal in the world, that's probably not a great omen for your defense as a whole.
Yeah, there you go. All right, coming up, we'll talk to the Sklar brothers, Bill Monroe on the Spring Chinook Salmon Run, and more. You got the BFT statewide.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.